Alright, time for another DoNotGuide.com video presentation. So, I have a subject in mind. Something to do with life lovers versus. Something to do with sort of saying, well, let's say the starting point was you're going to sell something to somebody and your starting line is, well, you're going to be killed. Okay, so yes, you're going to be made alive and then we're going to give you some sort of life, but then we're going to kill you. Okay, and that's part of the bargain. So right off, you have to accept the fact that we're going to kill you, and it's not going to be quick. It's going to be, you know, months of being killed. And that's, you know, you have to accept that. So that's sort of, you know, it's to me sort of a persuasive argument that, yeah, you'd have to be offering an awful lot to be able to persuade somebody to just accept, right? And if your offer is, well, you might have a good life. I mean, you might win a gold medal and you get all the chicks for free and all that kind of crap, and then we'll kill you. but no, you can't really sell that, right? You have to sell something like you're just going to be some average Joe or Jane, you know, and then we're going to kill you. I mean, you know, why would you wake me up for that bargain? Because it's not a bargain, obviously. So that's sort of just a simple argument. And then the other subject was the nihilist kind of perspective where people play is-ought games. Because that came up in a science video, which was kind of funny, in a physics conversation. And it's just, you know, what's so complicated about this is thing? I mean, the is thing is just saying, well, yeah, life isn't all, you know, it isn't anything you could say is all free, okay? It's kind of expensive to be alive in terms of, you know, you're paying a price, you know, of something of value. I don't think it's conceivable to say you can't distinguish between the good and the bad of experience. And anybody who's saying they can't distinguish, yeah, you could legitimately call them insane or crazy or too fucktarded to worry about. So the is problem is just how much is there, right? It's not about whether there is something of value. It's just about an argument about how much value torture is. You know, how much is it worth? You know, how much torture is it to have a nail in your eye? Or to have, whatever, skin rash. You know, and what's it worth? But you really, to have an argument that there's no such thing is too silly. So there's plenty of is's in terms of blank is bad or blank is good. You know, it's good to be relieved of the rash. You know, it's good, you know, to have morphine. To mitigate against the pain of death and all of that. So those are obvious kind of statements. So to say there's no, we can't see the value, you know, or we can't detect it, you know, we can, you know, go out with our little magnifying glass and look at reality and somehow we can't see value. Yeah, we can. The fact that it's not a, you know, it's not material, you know, value isn't some material quality, you know, beyond the fact that material things create it, in the sense that, you know, obviously I would argue that the only thing of value in the universe is a sensation, and everything else is only valuable because it gives things good sensations or it gives things bad sensations. So you could just kind of say that, you know, mosquitoes are bad because, they cause humans bad sensations, you know, and diseases and all the stuff that causes even more bad sensations. And something else is good because, you know, it eats mosquitoes, right? That kind of thing. So it's not that complicated, I guess I would argue, in terms of just making the simple argument that, come on, who are you trying to kid? We can't find a value in the universe. I mean, we can't, you know, we can't use our brains to evaluate value, and we can't do it objectively, like We can't just understand that, yes, it's a brain. It has sensations. Bad sensations suck. I personally experienced them. I can tell you they suck. Okay, I have enough evidence to convict the bad feeling as a bad feeling. And it's just not negotiable. I mean, you can tell me my sensations are lying, but it's kind of silly because I'm experiencing them. So it's one hell of a lie. No, so it's really not a real rational argument, is there? Are they worth the time? So the nihilists are a tiny percentage of the problem compared to the religious kooks. So I guess I should, the life lovers. So it's probably not worth wasting too much time arguing about the reality of the existence of bad in the universe in terms of sentient organisms having bad experiences, bad sensations, unpleasant, nasty, torturous sensations. It's a brain function, and it has a definite arrangement. God doesn't make you feel bad. Your brain does. It has an arrangement in it. Little neurons are in certain positions, and they create a bad theater. And that's, you know. So, yes, it's not material in any other sense than, of course, the theater is material. The mechanism creating the picture in your brain, okay, in the space of your brain, is in fact a material substance, and it is in fact creating as a symptom of its function the idea. And maybe it's just an idea, but again, it's one hell of an idea that I'm having a feeling. And it's just, that's the way it works. So it is material at its source. The fact that what it creates isn't made out of a direct image. It's made out of a digital arrangement of crap inside of a brain. So it's not projecting it on a screen, but it's in the projector. Doesn't need to project it on the screen because basically it has you inside the projector too. You're in the projector watching the projection of the machine, and all of it is in just a little tiny container. I mean, it's a theater, but it's not it's without all the extra bits you don't need. How else to explain that? I mean, it's not just electricity in the sense that it's not because of the arrangement of it, because the pieces of it are creating. My eyes can see, and then your brain can just duplicate what the eyes are seeing without the eyes having to see it. You can close your eyes and your brain can create what you have seen in the past. It's there. I mean, you get the idea of it without having to. It's almost you can see memories better when your eyes are open. As funny as that sounds. Anyway, it's always some little distracting. Oh, that's not quite the right way to say it. So it is a problem making videos that are unscripted. Is that, it's even worse when you're scripting a video, right? Because then you have to see all the defects in language, and it takes forever for me. So that's why I don't do it, obviously. And it's not very, it's a skill to be able to read a script without sounding like you're reading a script. And I don't really have that skill. So, never mind. So another pointless distraction. But that's part of how the brain works. It's just constantly reacting. And you have to measure whether the reaction is worth mentioning or not. Now, this reaction wasn't, it wasn't worth it. No big payoff. But other times, it's sometimes good to be interrupted by the interrupting, part of the brain and realize that, yes, you're going down a wrong track, or you said that wrong and you really have to fix it now, and that kind of stuff. So, I guess I can take a pause any time, so I think I'll take one now since I'm distracted. All right, back. So, lots of thoughts, but the one that stuck was the fact that, you know, you live your life and it's my history that I saw a bunch of people, you know, old people would do this Rockwellian thing, like somehow it all is great, that, oh, I'm getting older and the new things and there's so much interest and so much blah, blah, blah. And, it's such a lie, right, from what I've personally experienced is that the older you get, the more things you've seen that you've cared about die horribly. I mean, just horrible. I mean, horrible. I mean, nursing home, horrible, choking death bullshit, right? then your own life, you're watching things that you hoped for, dreamed for, and all those things that are now beyond your grasp. I mean, you know, even if you could, you can't, you know, because you don't have the physical ability anymore. You know, you can't go out and, you know, hit a home run. You know, you can't go out and play the game. And those games were all part of who you were. And, you know, it's like you're a rock climber, you're this or you're that. And all of a sudden, you just can't do it anymore. Can't do it well enough to take any value or fun out of it. It's just watching yourself fail rather than watching yourself succeed. And so your life gets narrower and narrower because, you know, all you can trust yourself to do is pull weeds out of a garden. It's dismal. It's dismal getting old. Dismal, dismal, dismal. Horrible. It's so depressing. And, you know, they don't want to sell the truth, so I guess they just sell this lie. I mean, they all stand up and say stoically how great it all is and, you know, I'm handy able, you know, handy capable. And it's just such an indignity to all of the hard pain and suffering that goes into that kind of the factual reality of disability and dysfunction and degrade in function and degrade in the quality of your life. You know, you sneeze and a bunch of poop comes out of your ass or something. I mean, you know, it's embarrassing and humiliating and degrading, and yeah. So, I mean, it's clear the culture just keeps lying. I mean, it keeps lying about, you know, what the facts are and what it is to go through the process of having to watch everything you care about be destroyed, you know, by either the culture itself. It just says, no, we're going to do it this new way. You know, this new, ugly way, frankly. A way that just doesn't even make sense. It doesn't, you know, that you can't find any hope of figuring out why that happened. I mean, why this transition? I mean, just popped into my head, you know, just, just as a, you know, it's one of those, you know, just popped into my head. I mean, how the world changed from, you know, the 70s or 80s, you know, where shorts were shorts. You know, they were short. You know, and then they all of a sudden went to knickers again. I mean, below the knee, like, is now shorts. And baggy and frumpy and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it was almost like, okay, maybe, you know, Bruce Jenner on the cover of Wheaties was too much leg or something, and it just went to some bizarre transition, you know, the whole, you know, complete flip. And you're just saying, well, why couldn't it just, you know, incrementally move a little bit? It's aesthetically weird. And cars or any other thing, you could just find all these different things where you say, gee, the world looked prettier. You know, looked, it made more sense. And this new image of it, this new graphic is, you know, there's nothing that you can find aesthetically pleasing in it. So that's another kind of liability of getting older, is you get gapped. The society moves in a direction. And so you could argue that even that's probably part of the definition of a fuckable woman now, by average standards. She probably has an extra 50 pounds on her. You know, it is a very different definition of healthy or, you know, attractive and sensual. All these things have been completely changed. And then you have music. It's all over the place. I mean, I can't make any sense of how anybody could find a melody in any of the music you hear coming out of mostly FedEx trucks, right? Oh, they're so annoying. I mean, really, they're a half mile down the street and you can hear their frickin' radios or whatever they're playing. I mean, it's just, you know. I mean, this is where we have all of these, you know, you have all this technology, right? It's just so easy. You can, you know, Wi-Fi earbud thing. You can do all this, you know, you can keep your personal life very personal. And they choose not to, which is kind of bizarre. Well, I mean, it's kind of a statement saying, fuck you. And that's the part where you just got to wonder, well, you're saying fuck you to me, okay? You're yelling it out of your car. And what is my response supposed to be? But, boy, I really do want to throw a brick in your face. I mean, it really is just so ironic that they think they're just so boldly obnoxious. And you're just like, what the fuck is that? I mean, you know the radio's really loud. You know I can hear it. You know I'm just like sitting here on my front porch and you're just basically saying, I'm going to basically spit on you. I'm gonna yell so loud that the spit is gonna fly on you, sort of, so to speak. And I'm not gonna care. It's almost like I'm gonna do it on purpose. I mean, these are the kind of things that just, you know, they just kind of say, you know, yeah, that's what they're really doing. They're really being obnoxious on purpose. You know, it's not like an accident. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. You know, it's not like they didn't know somebody was behind them and they farted. No, they know you're there. Yeah. So even human beings are, I mean, I never had, there were shitty people in the world when I was a kid, but they didn't do that kind of shit. I mean, you know, they weren't, everybody was sneaky about it. You know, they didn't just fuck you so overtly. You know, they could sell you as a slave. They could do lots of things. You know, your best friend could be just be scheming and using you to network and do this and do that. You know, so yeah, you could get used and abused by people. But it always was sneaky. It wasn't right in your face just saying, fuck you. You're a bug. Yeah. So that's the irony of this, too, is these are people voting for more. You know, they recklessly have kids, they recklessly do all this shit, and it's just, I mean, really, is there some other thing to call them but assholes? So, I mean, yeah, but maybe it's, I'm just gapped, because I don't understand how blowing your nose on somebody else's shirt is, oh, that's perfectly cool. Yeah. That's what we do now. You know, that's cool. That's saying I love you. I don't think so. But anyway, all right, take another break because, yes, I'm distracted again. All right, back. So I did have occasion to watch one of the old movie versions of 1984. And I remember reading the book as a kid, and I do remember most of it I didn't find very interesting. You know, all the double speak crap, double think, triple think, all that didn't seem like any kind of way to really control a society. Really seemed kind of a lame and convoluted bunch of mush, frankly. You know, so the first three quarters of the book wasn't very interesting. But the whole extort somebody with their worst fear thing, okay, the thing they fear most, and force them, okay, to experience it, the threat of it anyway, that made me interested. So I remember all the rat stuff and all that kind of stuff, and you know the real payoff was that you'll sell your own mother to hell to evade that worst fear. And so that's a picture of the human character. And you could argue that, yes, if you really had to, if these people, as I've stated, you know, if the choice was your pro-lifeness, okay, you being a pro-lifer will now require you to actually inject children with cancer. You know, you have to go to the hospital, you know, to the, no, the playground, you know, where they're having fun, and you have to, you know, shove the tumor in there and ruin their life and kill them. Because it's all part of the fun of living. I don't know if you would be able to do it, right? Wouldn't that be like anybody with any kind of even a moderately decent character? Could they actually sit there with the little tickets? You know, the little, I have five long straws and I have five short straws. Or let's just, you know, even if it's 9 to 1. But we know it's more than 9 to 1. Because you know there's straws that are all kinds, right? There's 10 kids. You know only one of them is going to have the fun, good life, and you know most of them are going to have some kind of mediocrity, and some of them are going to be, have absolute hell. If you had to do the straw game, you had to sit there and, okay, I'll put it in the kid's pocket. Here's your fucking shit, straw. You could do this? You fucking creep? So, yeah, pro-lifers are creep. Maybe that's what I'll title the other video. Pro-lifers are, life lovers are creepy. Because they're basically endorsing this, okay? And they're too cowardly to recognize that if they had to do it, they'd sell their fucking mother to hell, okay? I mean, they would, all of this crap beauty that they think exists, okay, would all of a sudden be something they would sell to evade. It's just the truth, and they know it, and it's just bullshit. So they're just living on bullshit. So that part of 1984 where everybody's just a programmed robot saying what everybody else wants to hear, you know, down with foreigners, you know, up with foreigners. I mean, that's all the only two things you're allowed to say, right? I mean, you can't say something else, either down with foreigners or, you know, yay, foreigners are fun. Yeah, too silly. It's just too fucking silly to have those two choices. But that's where we are. I mean, that's the... we're on the brink of civil war. You know, it's pretty much obvious, right? And it's going to be over foreigners. And who's going to fight in the war? Foreigners! I mean, it's, you know, it's going to be too silly. I mean, it's already there. I mean, it's just, you know, we have dead people. You know, we have a choice between a nearly dead and a completely almost dead. You know, they're not even... And it goes back to the aging thing. These people can't hit no home runs, okay? I mean, they're way past playing the game, you know, with any kind of chance of winning. You know, they can barely stand up. And, you know, stay upright long enough to even read the piece of paper that they didn't write. I mean, it's just too, you know, this is the greatest superpower in the world, and this is what's running it, is just, it's not even Big Brother. It's not even the video of strong and virile and tough. You know, it's the image of weak and feebly and doddery and useless. I mean, it's so upside down. You're just saying, how could this TV be so upside down and nobody's noticing? I mean, the whole thing is back ass word. I mean, you're doing it the wrong way. I mean, you're pooing in the sink and, you know, washing your hands in the toilet. I mean, you're doing this wrong. Anyway, I'm obviously distracted again. All right. So I was thinking about the words difficult and futile. You know, what's this? Because that's the line I've always lived in, is this stupid line right between difficult, really tough, and futile. You know, lost cause the whole life has been this lost cause, this barely hopeful chance of success. And that's part of life. I mean, all people, I think, have some competitiveness in them, and they all want to excel at something. And you don't like being second or third or 968,974th. You know, you kind of want to be the best. And so that part was pretty natural, I suppose, in growing up and just finding myself inadequate and struggling to find where I could excel and be more than adequate. and then this, obviously, slowly but surely, I realized the fight needs to be broadly constructed, because it's not just about me. It's about the future, and it's about, you know, the fact that, you know, realizing that, you know, there was a moment in my life where I did the, you know, look out the window and see the slaves and realize, oh, next time around, I may be one of them. You know, I better do something about this. I better make their lives better, because just in case I end up one of those people, you know, I got to make sure their life isn't going to be shit. Because when I do it, I don't want to do it that way. I want to do it a better way. You know, I want the better version of the story. And then you realize, yeah, your life is bigger than your life. It's, you know, you got to try to construct a project for you to do that doesn't just benefit you, doesn't make you feel better about yourself, but it also makes the world a better place, or makes it work better, or more efficient, and all that stuff. So I did sort of get into the business of making machines, because that was sort of, you know, a dual purpose. You're thinking that, yeah, I'm making these machines that do this more efficiently and more productively and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, in the end, that has to be a good thing, okay, if done right and all that kind of crap, of course. But, you know, this project is, you know, lots of people say, okay, it's futile. Well, no, it's not futile, because the one obvious fact is that the war has been won, in the sense that anybody who's not a robot, you know, an idiot, let's just say, we're all robots, but I just mean a robot to culture, and they haven't done any, they've done the very, very minimum. I mean, they might be literate, but that's about it. You know, they know what some words mean, and they know how to use them to say hello and goodbye, but they can't do much else. And that's the majority of the mob, you know, is people with lesser rather than more elaborate skills, you could argue, are limited capacity, because they, you know, they were raised in a shithole, and that's just the truth. And the shithole, okay, didn't have Harvard in it. It didn't have, you know, it didn't have all these places where all of this knowledge of books and learning and perspective would have been gleaned. So they didn't spend much time doing any of that book learning crap. And all they did was learn how to eat garbage and, you know, do so with minimal efficiency. So like in Big Brother, it's just you have this mob of humans that are all, you know, of limited experience. And then you have the few who have, you know, found the secret knowledge, you know, found an old book or found something that's now got their brain interested in a bigger story than, you know, walk down the street, you know, mumble your sacred words and, you know, live in a Muslim society, essentially. you know, fake it. Just live a fake life, a big, fake, phony life, and then, you know, try to find little places you can go where you don't have to be a Muslim anymore. It's another side story, frankly. So futility, right? Back to futility again. So even if it was futile, let's just argue that you could make some argument that it's futile to have a conversation, because, frankly, the conversation isn't going to be able to, you're not going to be able to put in an hour video all of the books ever written, you know, and all of the perspectives ever articulated by a human being. All of the interesting fables and narratives and stories, reflecting the human dilemma and the question of our origin and the question of our mechanical function, the science, all that. Yeah, people don't got it, and you can't give it to them like that. Can't give them all that perspective, all that context. And frankly, without the context, it's mushy. Very hard to tell somebody who believes in, gods and clouds and whatever, heavens and, I don't know, whatever they believe, spirit worlds or something, and drag them to this mechanical process of abiogenesis and, chromosomes and cell division and, the gaining of organs and attributes and capacities and realizing that the human function is completely dependent on crap in and then it just makes crap out. And that the whole system is, the food is the shit. It's all circular and it's all just animated motion, and that our motion is completely controlled by this much more complicated process. We're not just drop a rock on a teeter-totter and shoot another rock in the air. We have a whole bunch of those things all piled on top of each other, pushing and pushing and pushing and creating a person. And that's all it is, though. It's just a machine, okay? Just a little biological machine, and you're squeaking and eking through an existence. And the understanding is that you've been constructed to do one thing, which is, get healthy enough to fart an egg and force another version of yourself to do the same thing over again, and do it better than the others doing it, better enough that you're not the one getting the short straw that says drop dead. So that narrative can't really be explained, okay, just by saying it. I mean, I could just say it, and maybe there's a few imbeciles that say, oh yeah, I get that. You didn't need to say much more than that. I get it. I'm stupid, okay? I am ill-informed. I really haven't any great knowledge of the world or how it works or how it did work or what the mechanical natural systems work. I'm clueless. So this just, I could interject at another point, though. But the alternative is that some things can be simply explained. So if I was to say, people talk about this global warming thing and, they all talk about it as if, the system is too hard to understand. And in a way, it's really easy to understand, if you just break it down into what was the world like 200 million years ago and what's the world like now. And, the simple truth is that it was wetter and hotter. And the wet part is the really important part. Water molecules in the atmosphere are the things that hold heat, and they're the things that do it really well. And so you start collecting more and more heat because of you've got a bunch of hot water molecules in the atmosphere. And the more of those you have, the more energy you keep in the atmosphere. And so it gets hotter. So the more you add, the hotter it gets, and then the hotter it gets, the more ends up in there. And you could just make the simple argument that a key mitigator is this black stuff, this carbon, and that what the world looked like 200 million years ago was, or 300, it didn't have coal and oil and natural gas in the ground. So all those things that have a whole bunch of this black carbon stuff that's not very greenhousey. I mean, it doesn't do a lot, but it just does enough, okay? It creates enough of a mitigator to make it more humid, to make more water in the atmosphere. And that's all you really, that's the key one. So I'm just saying, But you can sort of understand that that's a huge difference, right? I can explain that, look, the big difference between when the world was hot, that is 10 degrees Celsius hotter on average, when it was that because there was no methane in the ground, there was no, there weren't layers and layers and layers of coal, and there weren't gallons and gallons and, of oil. And all of that stuff was sunk carbon. And once you put the carbon back on the surface, it gets into the atmosphere, and you're going to get hot again. So the only reason why the world got cold was because a bunch of carbon was sunk into the ground. And clearly, nobody else did it but us. I mean, trees didn't do it. Nothing else did it. We did it. We released all that carbon. Something like almost half the oil, Well, the usable oil. So it was a lot. I mean, just think about how much of that stuff is being used every day. I mean, how much has to be pumped out? I mean, it's this huge volume of this stuff that we are pulling out of the ground every single hour, every day, blah, blah, blah. And to sit there and pretend that doesn't have something to do with it. So, I mean, that should be a simple enough argument, right? You shouldn't have to get too detailed. In a half hour, you should be able to convince any imbecile on earth that, okay, I get that. That sort of makes a lot of sense. I don't need to have a huge amount of technical knowledge to say, okay, that is a difference, all right? Maybe it's not the cause, but I mean, it's, it'd be a bizarre coincidence that being the facts, those being actual facts, that there wasn't carbon automatic, the carbon wasn't always in underneath the surface. The oil wasn't always there. And when it wasn't there, the Earth was a different planet than it is with the stuff in the ground. So that simple fact is not that hard. So again, I'm saying, it shouldn't be that difficult to explain to an imbecile that life ain't all that. But the first obstacle for a lot of these conversations is why the channel's called Do Not God. Because God is just in the fucking way of anybody being something other than an imbecile. I mean, that stupid fable, these stupid faith fables, wishful thinking, I mean, it's just so silly, a wishful thought even. It doesn't even make any sense, and it's so strongly held on to. And it's so, on its face, it's just silly. I mean, why would I want to go to some place where they waste a bunch of rubies and emeralds, decorating the clouds? I mean, that's the kind of stories in there, the kind of bullshit. I'm going to go there without my, the woman I raped, and then because I raped her, I had to marry her, and then it was okay. It wasn't rape anymore. And I don't even go there with my rape wife. What the fuck's the point? I go there and I forget who I am. Oh, great. I forget all the events that made me who I am. Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, I'm going to go somewhere, but I'm not going to be there when I get there. I mean, it's so stupid on so many fucking levels. I guess, if you go to hell, do you still remember your dead wife? Do you still remember your cat? Do you still remember all those sad things? I guess so, because it's hell. But if you go to heaven, all of a sudden, that's no harm, no foul. That never happened. Horror and tragedy and grief. Oh, no. This is too silly. And you're just saying, well, that seems futile. I mean, people who can fall for a story as stupid as all the stupid religions are stupid, silly stories. I mean, they're so preposterously stupid. I mean, it's an Avatar movie. I mean, it's just too stupid. floating mountains. It has some kind of crap in it. You just say, fuck you, this is too silly. That does seem futile. But there's no other game, so it doesn't matter. So that's what I wanted to get to, was the point. I don't care whether you have defined it as futile. Because, frankly, it's the only game to play. There's nothing else worth doing than fighting the root cause. than curing the disease. If you're not going to cure the disease, everything else just seems like, oh, fuck, I'm going to make Band-Aids. I'm going to make splints for broken limbs. I'm going to, you know, okay, yes, it'll make it a little bit better. But it's so short of prevention. It's so short of, you know, getting rid of it, stopping it. No more torture is so much better than, here's a double aspirin. Yeah, double aspirin just isn't good enough. You know. Yeah. Ugh. Yeah, I'm not settling for that. No. I'm going to try to do better. You can say I can't do it, but I'm going to try. Because it's reasonable to go for a win than just some marginally superior failure. Well, just to complete a story that I didn't tell completely, I was just thinking about the water, the environment thing, the oil thing. And the key to water in the atmosphere is there's no other way to get water into the atmosphere except to heat the atmosphere. You can't just inject it because it won't stay. It won't stay there unless it stays warm. So it's heat. You need heat to create humidity. Without the heat, there is no humidity. The colder it gets, the drier the air gets. Because you can't hold it in the atmosphere. You can't knock it off the surface. You can't keep it in the atmosphere unless the atmosphere is hot. And so that's the key ingredient, right? That's why it falls down. Is because, you know, it goes up and it gets cold. And the cold makes the water turn back into water. And it falls back down on the earth, okay? That's the way it works. And it doesn't fall down as being warm stuff. It falls down as cold stuff. Sometimes frozen stuff. So, you know, it's... So that's why you need some other thing to create a little bit of heat in the atmosphere. So a little extra heat in the atmosphere to create the extra water molecules, and now the extra molecules are what really do the greenhouse thing. They're the ones that do the more goes in than comes out kind of crap. And just leading to a cycle that can get out of control. And that's what we're creating, is a cycle that'll get us back out of control. And the trick is that it's not going to just, you know, it's like anything you hit, you know, it pushes all the pendulum swing thing. You have the pendulum swing thing. You're saying you want the pendulum to stay here. Well, it's not going to stay here, because as you push it, it's going to gain momentum, and it's going to get way too hot before it comes back down again, swings the other way. So it's as if you really are risking, you know, a real catastrophe, because you're not going to be able to increase the temperature the way the temperature was made cooler. The Earth was made cooler really slowly, okay? The carbon was sunk little pieces at a time over hundreds of millions of years. Hundreds of millions of years of just stealing a little bit of carbon. But what are we doing? We're increasing the carbon really, really fast, okay? And so everything's going to happen really, really fast. You know, the warmth is going to break the, you know, it's going to free the methane. All kinds of other stuff is going to happen. And yeah, that stuff might only last 10 years, but it won't matter for those 10 years. It's going to get, you know, the environment's going to be way out of whack. You know, so it's yeah. But it's a story that should be able to be told without a person having to know every book ever written on atmospheric phenomenon. It's just not that complicated. Well, it's... It's often not presented as simple as, you know, what changed over the last 300 million years. And what changed was there's a bunch of dead organisms, I mean a bunch of corpses in the ground. And because they're in the ground, they're not cycling through the atmosphere anymore. And, yeah. That's so. I'm just saying the logic is that if, let's say, we never pulled any oil out, never pulled any coal out, and never pulled any of this stuff out, it would just keep putting more and more carbon deeper and deeper, and there'd be less and less and less of it available to be in the atmosphere. That's just the truth. All right. To some point, we would not function anymore because there wouldn't be enough available carbon. You could argue that eventually we'd sequester all the carbon and everything on Earth would almost come to a standstill, you know, all the biological functions, because carbon is a catalyst for so many things. So many pieces of our functionality are dependent on it being exchanged. All right, pause. All right, just thinking about the method of communicating ideas and just how this doesn't really work. Okay, this human-to-human thing, it doesn't work for me. So I guess there's too many aspects of my personality that, you know, people start squinting or something. They don't like me. Something, you know, is bothersome, clearly. Okay. I've been on this medium for 20 years or whatever, and I really, you know, the audience doesn't grow. Because I'm not a fun enough cartoon to watch. And that's pretty much what I would consider the definition. Because most people just want to watch cartoons. Or they want to watch somebody say what they want to hear, which is, "Hi, YouTubers, are you doing swell today? I'm doing swell. Is everything swell? Yeah, everything's swell. Swell, swell." Whatever. Something like that, anyway. So I probably should just make cartoons. I should just come up with, you know, whatever. I mean, I actually started on the internet by just having a can of Ensure talking to something else. I can't, like a donut or something. I can't remember what it was. but I just put little faces on them and made them talk to each other. Just because, forget having a person actually honestly express their thoughts and ideas and explain their history and their reasoning. That just doesn't turn anybody on. Talking can of whatever. That they can follow along. Gumby or something, you know. That's the trick of it, is that I guess you have to turn it into like a little cartoon, because that's pretty much the mentality of the average human, is they're still a kid watching cartoons. You have to have a talking rabbit. You have to have some kind of bullshit that somehow triggers brain function. Maybe I just need the laughing baby, right? The Teletubby thing, it worked, right? They just put a laughing baby in the corner of the screen. I could just have a little laughing baby. And then maybe the videos will be watchable. I mean, it is, you know. But yeah, see, that's one of those things where my sense of personal dignity gets in the way. It's like, I'll go so far, but I won't do that. Oh, come on. Don't force me to do that. And so I'm selling my mother to hell because, that's just too humiliating. You have to really go that low? No, I can't do it. I can't do it. Too embarrassing. It's got to be something like that, right? Oh, and that's the part that's just, yuck. So with this presentation thing, how you present the argument is essentially more valuable than the argument. You know, it's 99% of the argument is the presentation of the argument, how you say it, what part comes before what part, how you write this little silly paragraph. I just don't have great skill at doing that. So that's not really good for me. So I'm thinking about the Effelist videos, the Gray Chai Cho guy who, took the little pieces and music and, made really nice, shorter, more artistic presentation of the argument. Let's call it that. you know, where I'm not in the video most of the time. Yeah, so it takes me out. Just puts the argument in with, you know, images. But anyway. But yeah, that really didn't completely win the argument either. So I don't know, you know. But anyway, it is something I have to consider, is that there, I have collected a bunch of arguments, and the point is to put them in some form that is the right cartoon character, right? So, you know, it's almost like writing a song, I guess. You know, there's lots of songs that are almost a good song. I mean, change the lyrics, change the melody, change this, change that, you know, and it's a song. It's so close, but yeah, it just misses. And there's such a subtle difference between just missing and, you know, home run. It's either you strike out or you hit a home run. And so far, yeah, I'm striking out, but, you know. You know, maybe I'm striking out because I'm swinging a bat that can't possibly ever, you know, hit the ball. Because, it, you know, it's that just too short. So I have to play on the field. I have to play the game, you know, that the morons are playing. I have to, you know, be on their field and play by their rules to some extent. And so far I haven't been compelled. I haven't thought it appropriate. I haven't concluded this is what has to be done. I haven't whatever to get to that point where I'm going to devote time to strategy rather than time to making sure the argument is substantial and credible. Blah, blah, blah. So anyway, I'm very much distracted today. So this video is taking longer than most. Yeah, partly because I am in this, you know, mood to, you know, I got to do better. I know that. And just all the choices of better just don't seem like I should have to do them. That's all. I just don't want to. Yeah, I don't want to be something other than, I don't want to have to go to the work of acting, pretending, pantomiming. I don't want to do that. All right, back. I didn't think of anything. Yeah, so, yeah, nothing to say. I mean, beyond, yes, okay, so there's all these simple arguments about how life fails, okay, that if you really had to do, you know, if you really had to take responsibility for what you were advocating for, what you were voting for, if you had to pay for it, if you had to be the recipient of the wonderful gift you're giving, you'd say, no mas, no thank you, leave me alone, bullshit, I don't want to do that. And the reason why people think they want to do it is because they are thinking their kid is going to be the same as them, and it's going to have the same likes and dislikes, and it's going to find the same things enjoyable and repugnant. And that's just fallacious nonsense. I mean, that's just being too silly to think it's going to work out that way. And that you're really sentencing your child to some sort of, you know, it's going to be a much more crooked world from their perspective than the one you're seeing. Because if you're seeing some reason to think there's reason to be optimistic, that everything's going to work out just fine, that everything's going just fine, that human beings are doing just fine, and that you can prevent all of these harms from happening to your kid, that is just so fucking stupid and unrealistic that people should actually be put in the incompetent home. They should be in the incompetent asylum. If they realistically think that's how it works, that they will stop the cancer with their will, you know, that they will stop the, you know, paid Pee Wee football and got paralyzed, and they're going to prevent that from happening, you know, with their or whatever. They'll go woo and move their fingers. Yeah, that'll make it happen. No, it won't. They're wishful thinking. I mean, wishful thinking is just, you know, really stupid. You know, it should get you in the stupid asylum. So it's just really simple arguments, and I think they're simple enough that even an imbecile should be able to get it. But the real thing to take out of their brain is the real stupid part, you know, the fable, the god that gets in the way of them accepting any other truth or any other foundation for how they should be reasoning about their life and existence. So I guess that's one of the telling arguments, right? Is that when the religious people say, you know, quite honestly, if there is no God and I am wrong, then boy, I have made a big mistake because life is hell, and that's just the truth. It's a terrible story. They wouldn't vote for it anymore. If there's no God in the story, they're not going to vote for having the story perpetuated. The story is ugly and cruel and stupid. So they're admitting the truth that that's what's really on the line, is doing something incredibly stupid, and they're voting for it because they've done something incredibly stupid, which is believe in a fable. No, unconditionally. To accept, even though they know their evidence sucks, you know, out of faith, without reason, without logic. You know, that is, they've certainly risked an awful lot of failure on the pipe dream, you know, and the failure will be experienced by their children, you know, things they're supposed to cherish and love. They're the thing that'll be sentenced to the horrible, pointless death. The failure they've created. So, that a religious person should be able to understand that. Right, if there's no God, what if there is no God? Are you really selling something that's worth it? You know, no happily ever afters here. Just slow, miserable decline and death. That's all you're sentencing people to. Watch everything you care about die, and then we'll kill you. That's what you're selling. All right. It's probably enough of a video. Another 3 minutes probably would be, you know, best. Just to make it a round number of units. So what if time was, you know, what if a second was twice as long? What if? Lots of what ifs, right? What ifs are sort of fun. How many what ifs would you, you know, there's just so many little tiny things you could change and everything changes. And so I guess that's sort of the argument here. Just little tiny perceptual changes in what people think, and what they believe. Just make one idea stick, and all the rest of the ideas become incompatible with that one you force to stick. So if you can get evolution to stick, to stay in the brain as a grounding point, then it's really easy to get things to stick, like you're a robot. you're just a manifestation of programming. You're a reflex, you know, that's all you are. You're a ball of reflexes, and all of them have been sprung, you know, based on silly circumstances that have nothing to do with anything, you know, the color hat your fifth grade teacher was wearing. Stupid little things have decided what colors you like, what shapes you like, what all kinds of things. It's all been decided by nonsense, not by reasoning and logic or any of that kind of stuff. And you're pathetic, really, in terms of the distractions of your function. You're just constantly trying to find a little bit of comfort, you know, somebody to, you know, rub your hiney and say, there, there. little silly narratives, little silly little stories you're living for in the pursuit of your grand opus that is your life. And you're really not going to sing My Way when it's done, frankly. you're not going to, it's not going to be some great story. It's going to be a tragic, sad, and frankly pathetic story of a waste of function, a waste of love and sensation and ambition and all of that. It's just a waste because you didn't do a damn thing in your life to fix anything. You just fucking behave like a monkey in a zoo. And that's it. You just did what it takes to get a banana thrown at you. All right. Now it's enough. All right. So till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. Yeah. Video number 15,674. Oof.